already you've got it tuned to KHUM. Thank you so much for that. And so coming up tomorrow night at the Eureka Theater, it's going to be a new film called From Wounded Knee to Standing Rock, A Reporter's Journey, a film by Kevin McCarron, who is here in the studio, along with a whole bunch of folks. We've got Jerry Rohde, we've got Willard Carlson, and Ted Hernandez. Thank you all for coming.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, thank you. You don't have to be quiet. Don't be shy. They can't see it. It's not television. It's radio. Go ahead and speak up. So Kevin, you've had this is about your journey, really, and which started when you were just a young reporter and just happened to be at Wounded Knee when it all went down, right?
I was just starting out. I was very much wet behind the ears. Mm-hmm. There was a new program in Washington with a catchy title called All Things Considered. And I got a job there. It seemed like a temporary job. They sent me out for a few days from the Minneapolis-St. Paul station to Wounded Knee, which at that time had been taken over by 200 Native Americans from the American Indian Movement, a militant organization that was founded in Minneapolis. So I knew of or had met a couple of the leaders, in fact, and some of the other people I had shot pool with back in those days. So I had a little bit of an entree, but I'd never been on an Indian reservation, much less seen somebody shot. And so this was a big undertaking for me. I was going into it blind. And so I went there and, you know, took one change of clothes, thought I would be there for a couple of days or a weekend, and ended up being there for 71 days,
wow,
which was 10 weeks, and that, at the time, turned out to be the longest civil disorder in American history. So it was a shooting war, and at some point, there were people killed, many Indians wounded, a couple of federal agents wounded, and hundreds of law enforcement from all different departments surrounded and made a very tight noose around Wounded Knee. And then a couple of weeks into the confrontation, banned the media. They cut the oxygen, as they saw it, that was driving this. And the oxygen was publicity, a soapbox for grievances. And they didn't want those grievances to get out to the American people, because if they did, there'd be political support. And indeed, there already was political support. According to a Gallup poll at the time, most Americans, and remember this was during the Nixon administration,
yep,
most Americans favored the occupiers, favored the militants rather than the FBI. So the FBI thought if you banned the press, then you could take care of this problem of these grievances getting out to the rest of the country. So they did that. And because I was young and naive, I was hoping I'd be someday working for CBS or one of the big guys, but I didn't know the rules. And so I decided to go in the back door, and I found a way to walk overland about 10 miles and come in with some people who were ferrying supplies, guns and ammunition and food in and out through the FBI lines. And so that's really how I got started. And when I got into Wounded Knee, the reporters were all gone because they were being charged with felonies if they tried to get in. And I had the place to myself. The only thing is I wasn't a real reporter. I was a kind of a fake reporter. I was just starting out, you know.
So, cub reporter.
That's when I got really scared.
Wow. And so... But you were bringing the news, right?
Yeah, you know, we had a backpack that I got from the Boy Scouts or something, and was all loaded with film and all loaded with a tape recorder. I had reel-to-reel tape in those days. I bet you don't remember reel-to-reel tape.
Well, of course I do. I'm old enough to remember that. I used to edit it. I'm very good at editing old reel-to-reel tape.
Yeah, razor blades, right?
Sure, absolutely.
So, and that's a big machine you have to carry in. It was a German-made machine called an Uhr, mm-hmm, reel-to-reel, so that was pretty heavy stuff. And a camera, I had a wind-up camera, a wind-up Bell & Howell camera, mm-hmm, that was spring-loaded.
Yeah, I had one of those.
Did you really?
Sure.
Well, you go back a ways, too.
Yeah. So, born in the 50s.
Yeah, so anyway, this is pretty pretty basic stuff, you know, to go in there and to try to record this. And I did. And then, you know, of course, I thought that I would lose this. So at some point or other, I had to bury all those tapes and bury wow. all the film. And, well, I buried the news at Wounded Knee at that point.
Wow.
So went back and retrieved it later. And that's some of that material is.
Yeah, you literally buried it.
I buried it. I put it in plastic. Then I put it in steel cans. And then I buried it. I dug a deep hole. In fact, I knew they would sweep the village afterwards with metal detectors. So I put some car parts up near the surface, you
wow.
know, that would ring the machine of the agents when they came through.
Very clever.
And anyhow, it survived, and that's going to be the footage that you'll watch tomorrow night.
That's absolutely amazing. Wow. That's just, that's what a story. We should make a film about that. Fantastic.
So, I mean, the big part about it is if you fast forward, you know, then I went on and actually became an actual reporter, a real reporter, and worked overseas mostly in countries like mostly in the Middle East and Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria, places like that.
Other peaceful
and
areas.
40 years after Wounded Knee, my wife and I were up here in Humboldt County looking for a place to camp. And we saw all these Winnebagos and tourists and everything. We said, we got to get away from that. So we went and we thought we found a remote place that was Winnebago-proof, so to speak. And it turns out we were trespassing on the Yurok tribal land. And we didn't know any better. And we saw this fellow working on a religious or ceremonial site named Willard Carlson.
Uh-huh.
And Willard, of course, is here this morning. And so we went up and chatted him up. And Willard was acting toward me just the way I was acting toward him, that we didn't believe the story that either one of us had actually been in Wounded Knee. So we're asking certain pointed questions to see whether he was BSing or I was BSing. And so Willard says, well, come on down to my house on the Klamath River, and I'm going to show you a picture. So he took me down to his house on the Klamath River, and he takes out this picture, and he says, here's me. I was 20 years old when I got 19 rifles in Humboldt County and drove
wow.
1,500 miles on icy roads out to fight the FBI in South Dakota, and here I am in Wounded Knee. And he shows me the picture, and he said, what do you think of this picture? And I said, you know, I think it's a pretty good photograph. And by the way, Willard, I took it. So
wow.
then we knew the BSing was over. You know, he proved his part, and that was good.
Well, Willard, thank you for coming in here. Really appreciate that. And just for the record, Willard Carlson and my family go back a ways as well. Your mom, Margaret, was really good friends with my father-in-law, Robert Cogan. And as a matter of fact, you were telling me that that basket, that baby basket that we got for our first kid, came from you, right?
Yeah, the baby basket came from my wife's grandmother.
Wow.
So a very premier basket weaver, Yurok tribe.
Yeah.
So we got that for Robert Cogan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember after him getting the basket, we took a little boat ride from like the Klamath Glen. We went down to the mouth. Then we went past Blue Creek where my mother lives. So we were just out enjoying the drive in the leisure afternoon. And I asked Robert Cogan, I said, well, do you want to turn around now? He goes, no, let's just go a little further, okay? So we just took our time. We just kind of put it along and probably spent, you know, hour and a half in a boat cruising. So I remember the basket. That's when I asked you this morning about it.
Yeah.
And when you said that, you know, Robert was your father-in-law.
Yep. Yes,
and
family
so
treasure.
Happens it was your child.
Yep. Yeah, he's now 28, living in New York City now.
Well, that's great.
Kind of amazing. Well, let's go back a little further, though. Back to when you were 20 years old and heading off to Wounded Knee with an armload of rifles. How'd that go?
Well, I just start out with Dennis Banks and Russell Means had been on national TV after they went into Wounded Knee. It was just a few days after, and they were calling for help from all Indian tribes and other interested supporters for help in their fight with the federal government, not only the federal government, but the local tribal government, who had their own kind of like militia called the Goons, Guardians of the Ogala Nation. So there was quite an encampment being surrounded. So we, when I say we, us and some supporters, we were students at Humboldt State. So we had these rallies, like, you know, during the week. The local news station was there. And we were talking about, you know, getting medical supplies and support. And a contingent was going to go to Wounded Knee to help American Indian Movement. And so we did that for like a week or 5-6 days. And I went and see my mother. She lived up by the Oregon border then. I had told her that the there was a war going on the plains. And I was recruiting help and looking for guns. So I got about 7 to 8 rifles from my mother from, you know, I mean, they were all operational guns, and so...
just like any good mom.
So I told Mom I was going to be gone. I wasn't sure I was going to be back.
Wow.
And so then I went up the river, Wetchpack, Orleans, Hoopaw. So TV news was there covering the rallies on HSU campus. So there was a lot of things happening there. So it was pretty vocal. No violence.
Tell about the post office, the story you told me about the rally, and then you showed up at 9 o'clock the next morning in Arcata.
Yeah, well, like, we had to rally. And so we're all supposed to meet, like, on a Sunday morning, 8, 9 a.m. So I show up at the Arcata Plaza. And I'm the only one there. Where in the heck's all these? I was expecting 60 to right. 100 plus people. All right, this is going to be quite a standoff.
What about that HSU prof that he showed up on his 10-speed bike?
Yeah, a professor showed up from HSU, and I can't remember his name. It was hard to remember his name at the time. And he wished me good luck, and he handed me an $80 check.
Wow.
Which at that time...
That's a lot of money back then.
That was a lot of money, and it bought a lot of ammunition. So
sort of an academic gift.
Yeah. It was educational. And so a couple of my friends that I knew that were already committed on going, they lived out in Manila, so I got my car, head out there, and... got them up, and they go, oh, yeah, yeah. So they had like an old 64 Chevy truck, 63 Chevy truck, big camper on it, and a canvas flap on the back instead of a door. So they showed up, and then a couple of the other guys and a couple of ladies, a couple of women from the Miwok and Pomo tribe showed up. And so a couple of the other guys who were giving rallies, friends of mine, they showed up, and they said, are you guys serious about going? We said, hell yeah. So one of the brothers that was lived in Manila said, well, hey, we're going to go with you or without you. So they took off for a couple hours. They came back with their truck, and we got ready to go finally, probably about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So we drive to Willow Creek. There's a liquor store there where they also sold guns and ammunition. So we stopped in there and used the $80 check to buy ammunition. So the store owner, he says, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to start a war? We kind of snickered and said, yeah. And we just left.
Wow. Wow. That is amazing. So, again, I want to remind you, the film is going to be tomorrow night. It is at the Eureka Theater. And let's see, doors open at 6. The film is at 7. It's called... From Wounded Knee to Standing Rock, a Reporter's Journey. And there's way more to the story to tell. And I want you guys, can you guys hang around? I've got to take a quick break. Let our sponsor say a few words, and we'll hear more of this story in just a moment. Anyway, thanks for listening. We got it on KHUM. We'll be right back. All right, it is 36 minutes after 9 o'clock. Thank you so much for listening. You've got it tuned to KHUM. We've got a whole room full of folks, and we were talking about the screening that's happening tomorrow night at the Eureka Theater, from Wounded Knee to Standing Rock, A Reporter's Journey by Kevin McCarron. And we were just talking with Willard Carlson about his journey when he was 20 years old to Wounded Knee. And the interesting thing, we were talking a little bit off air with Kevin, that you went there for that violent episode and returned a nonviolent demonstrator for things happening now, correct?
Well, pretty much correct. We did have the Blue Creek Yurok Land Convention 76,
true,
where we closed Klamath River off, because my mother and my brother and everybody was getting arrested for trespassing on Simpson Timber Company land. So that was a big decision. That was a big court case that was ruled in favor of a Simpson Timber Company, but it was overturned on an appeal in 1978 called the Harold Blake Mark Carlson versus Arnett, which gave us tribal people members permission to cross private land to access our own. And then, of course, we also had the Fish Wars 1978 with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
And Kevin, you were, of course, at Wounded Knee. You were also at Standing Rock.
Yes, and that was in 2016. I made a couple of trips out there, one in pretty good weather and one in December when it was, gosh, Willard, it was really cold out there. Maybe with the wind chill, something like 50 below. It was awful.
Ooh.
Yeah, and there were at that point, it was amazing because there were some 10,000 people, primarily Native Americans, who came from tribes all over Canada and the U.S. And it was the largest assembly, they said, of Native people since the 1800s there at Standing Rock to oppose that pipeline that the tribe felt was polluting its water. So it was kind of a journey for Willard to come back in his mid-60s after being out there as a 20-year-old at Wounded Knee. And
when it was really cold that day, the wind was so hard, Standing Rock he was talking about. Well, we came back from the bridge where they had the big confrontation with
North Dakota police.
The police, yeah. You know, just a couple of days before. And so we was out there and we seen the signs where it said no trespassing. You couldn't go past this certain point. It was so cold that the inside of my goggles had ice in them. But we got back to our car rental. There was four of us. So we're sitting there getting warm and a woman pulls up and she's like a double amputee. She has these blades on. And the wind's blowing 60 miles an hour. And this woman, she gets out of her vehicle, gets all wrapped up, and she takes off like Blade Runner and fighting that wind. And talk about the strength and sheer determination. It was amazing to see that.
Wow. Absolutely amazing. And It's kind of the timing. We were just talking a little bit off air about this. The timing of having the screening and having you all here is kind of amazing because next week, Monday, the city of Eureka is voting to give back the remainder of Talawat, formerly known as Indian Island. Of course, back in 2004, when Cheryl Seidner was the tribal chair. We were there for the 40 acres that were given back, which include the sacred shell mound and all that. And that was a very exciting time when we were there and we broadcast it over KHUM. And Ted, you'll be there for this enormous thing. This is a big moment. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Ted Hernandez, of course, is the current tribal chair for the Wiat tribe.
Well, this is huge for the tribe. This has been going on for years. And, you know, I was there in 2004 when we got the 40 acres back just as a regular council member. But just to be there Monday, you know, first of all, I want to make sure everybody knows that everybody's invited to this. It's going to be at the Dorney Center at 10 o'clock. It's a big event, not just for the Wyatt tribe, but for Humboldt County. You know, we're about to get back 202 acres.
It's amazing. This is the site of probably the biggest stain on Humboldt County's history. It was the 1860 massacre that took place there. A horrific part of our history, and one that, you know, it cannot be erased. But as far as I know, Ted, I think this is the only time when any municipality has given back land to the native peoples. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. From what we hear, this is the only city that has done this. And, you know, that's amazing to see a city and a tribal government working together on the return of a sacred land.
It's wonderful.
It is. It is wonderful. But I do have to throw out there also, you know, it's all to our elders, like Willard, Cheryl, Albert, and Beverly James, are the ones that are starting, you know, the process of us younger people getting back what we have today. So, you know, we always have to remember the elders and thank them for the fights that they did. Because if it wasn't for their fights, you know, we wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, that is great. And Kevin, were you here in 2004 for this?
No, I've been there on the island once, and I think it was 2013 or 14 with my cinematographer, the legendary Haskell Wexler. The two of us came out there in a boat with the tribal chair and looked it over and then went to a ceremony that was held. Where was that ceremony held?
I think it was on Woodley Island.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's where we went to. So that's our only time going there. But I think it's pretty wonderful that to be up here now when this is happening. It's really hard to believe. So many people I have talked to about this massacre in 1860 have never heard of it, and I have to admit. And I thought that I was fairly aware of things like this. I did not know about this as a Californian. I did not know about this massacre until I came up here in 2010. Willard told me about this. And I said, what? So this is not very well known.
No.
And, you know, and Jerry is interviewed in the film, Jerry Rohde here sitting next to me. And Jerry made a very good point in the film that California is called the Golden State, but it's not been very golden to Native people. And that I think that's what you were. And were you referring, Jerry, to what took place there in Eureka?
Well, in part because there were so many people coming to California, 1849, 1850, trying to get rich quick. And a lot of these people were selfish people. There are people that wanted to live in a wide open place where there wasn't any law. And after about a year, some of them came up to the new gold rush that was on the Klamath and Trinity and rivers. And they wanted to move the Indians out of the way and kill them if necessary to get their land. And they started in right away. They landed in Humboldt Bay in April of 1850, and within 2 weeks they had started killing Wyatt Indians on the bay and destroying villages, and they just kept that up for years and years. And the Indian Island Massacre happened 10 years after that, and it turns out that that massacre that occurred on the island was one of just a dozen massacres that happened within a week's time. And they were all planned out by a group of whites who wanted the state government to approve a militia unit that would pay the whites for going out and killing Indians. And the governor wouldn't do this. And so the whites got together and planned all these attacks. And right afterwards, the governor was sent a letter and telling him that if he didn't want another mess like Indian Island, he'd better enlist this militia where they keep massacring Indians. And the governor held his ground and refused to establish that militia unit, but the killing continued even after that.
Was that the same governor who instituted the bounty system up here in Humboldt County in Del Norte?
Not that I'm aware of.
Willard, you were telling me about this.
I'm not sure. I think it might have been an acting governor. You know, when the, say, United States, they placed a acting governor that put a bounty on Native American males' heads for $25 and $10 to $5 for a young boy. And this was like from Sacramento all the way up. We had massacres in Yontocket, Tolowa Land, about 10,000. So there was a lot. And some tribes, they were really small. They were just decimated and or relocated to boarding schools or other reservations such as maybe Round Valley and Hoopaw and so forth.
And I think one of the reasons that things that took place here in Humboldt County are not really part of the dialogue of the history of Native Americans in this country is that we're really kind of off the beaten path. The term behind the Redwood Curtain still applies to this day. We're kind of a forgotten area, and that's good. And bad. It's kind of good in the fact that we're kind of a little isolated and we kind of have our own little world here, but also bad that certain, you know, bits of history like that are sort of not known.
You know, I was very happy to learn and to meet an HSU professor emeritus when I came up here the first time. It was a friend. In fact, it was a teacher, Willard's teacher, Jack Norton, who eventually became the associate producer of this film and will take part in the Q&A tomorrow night at the Eureka Theater. And he became a leading light because this information wasn't known. And he was appointed by the governor to a prestigious position. Jack Norton, you want to say a few words about him, Willard? Because
Jack was my teacher back in the 70s. And seemed like Jack was always like very, very, very educated in all the atrocities that happened here on the North Coast. Because hardly anything was ever mentioned about the genocide on the North Coast and California Indians. So Jack had written some books, Genocide in Northwest California or North Coast, and a few others that he's written. And I've always really respected Jack because he was so knowledgeable about a lot of things. And when I left to go to Wounded Knee and I came back, everybody missed their finals that were students, and some stayed over and, you know, followed American Indian Movement. So I gave an oral oral presentation to make up for my finals, and from having some Native American instructors, I got a B. but I always kept in contact with Jack throughout all the years. And so when I need to find out some historical facts or something, I always call Jack up. So I got him introduced to Kevin. So
Willard, you told me that that Jack was really the reason, sort of the founder of this concept of Native American Heritage Week, and this is it at HSU right now. And in fact, your friends Lonix and Donna Landry have been an essential part of. I think it was Donna who found this screening at the Eureka, wasn't it?
Well, Donna Landry, Lonix Landry runs the Intercept program at HSU. He's a real good friend of mine. Well, his mother, who I met quite some time ago.
Donna?
Yeah, mm-hmm. we were at the big time event, so I was talking to Lonix about, you know, finding a place to screen this film. And so he introduced me to his mother, and she Have to Know Wendy over at Eureka Theater. So Donna Landry has a lot of credit. She's a real go-getter.
Donna is a great friend of the family and definitely a real go-getter and a great singer, too.
She's amazing, and she's helped us so much, and I'd like to give her a nice applause for that.
Thank you, Donna.
And, of course, Lonix. And also I wanted to mention Brian Tripp was the instructor in American Art back in those days. And somebody, Bobby Lake, he passed away in October, I believe. I just got word from his son who told me this a couple of weeks ago. So I'd like to, you know, give an acknowledgement on that.
Sure.
Absolutely. I want to thank everybody.
But isn't, if Brian can't be there, isn't your son Pergish going to?
Yeah. Brian Tripp was supposed to sing a song, but Ted Hernandez, the WIOT chairman, is going to give the opening prayer.
Nice.
And so since Brian's going to a memorial and an art show and for La Pina in Sacramento, he called me the other day, said to take him off, or he's going to be gone. So my son Pragish is going to sing a drum song right following the opening prayer by Ted. And then we'll start the film.
Fantastic. Well, we are unfortunately out of time. We've got my show is just about at an end, but I want to remind folks to get to the Eureka Theater tomorrow night. Again, doors open at 6. The show is at 7. Eureka Theater's got 800 seats, so you should be able to get in there. You can get the tickets in advance, or you can get them at the door. It's $12 general. Students and seniors are just $8. And this is going to be fantastic. Again, the film is called From Wounded Knee to Standing Rock, A Reporter's Journey. And I want to thank all of you for coming in here and being part of this. Thanks for
all
coming down.
Thank you.
That was great. And, of course, Monday. You can make it out
Monday's
to the to the Adorney Center, and you can witness history in the making as Tollewood.
It's going to be a big day.
As Tollewood is given back to the WIOT tribe.
I do have to say something real quick.
Please do.
You know, with this film coming up, it's a great history about Indian country. But I also have to say, you know, I am also truly blessed that my daughter's film, which is called Duke, will be premiering at the American Indian Festival with Willard as well. So that's
fantastic.
Going to be talking more about the boarding school history.
So that's San Francisco
history.
At the end of this month. Oh, mm-hmm. Well, I'll get to meet her. Because
you will, and she's going to be going to your premiere on that one.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So I like, you know, how the two come together and bring the true history of Indian country, because we're talking about how we really don't talk about it. And it's with Willard and his team and, you know, the younger generation putting this together so people know the real history.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the books that Jerry has written.
Exactly.
That everything helps.
Exactly.
And I think something that we really need to remember is that, we look back at some of these horrific times and think, wow, how could people have been like that back then? But we also look at what's happening today, and this type of attitude still exists. Mm-hmm. And it exists as if we let it exist. If we let this kind of intolerance flourish, it flourishes. And you know, we always have to, keep our eye on this and make sure these kind of things don't repeat. They're already repeating in other places.
And I think with the return of the island, it's going to bring the healing that needs
absolutely.
To happen. So, I want to invite everybody to the Adorney Center, 10 o'clock. It's going to be a great day.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Ted.
Thank you, Ted. Yeah, thanks to all of you for coming out here. And I will put this up on our website along with a picture of all you guys, and feel free to listen to it, download it, whatever you want, share it with friends and family. All right, I've got to take a quick break, and we will hand it over to Midge up next.